Okay. There was a question that I want to address somewhat obliquely by giving a bit of an historical introduction. So far, we've been looking at songs more or less in the chronological order in which they were written, but we haven't paused, as we will right now briefly, to try to situate them inside specific historical periods. So it's relatively easy when you're dealing with the pre-state history, because pretty much from the beginning of sizable immigration to Israel at the end of the 19th century until the establishment of the state in 1948, historians have very ably divided that period into waves of immigration, aliyot. And there are historically five principal waves of immigration to Israel, five aliyot. So basically, I just want to take a couple of minutes now and try to situate some of the songs that we've looked at and some of those that we'll continue to look at today within one or another of these five principal historical periods, as I said, defined by waves of immigration called aliyot. The first aliyah began in 1882 with the founding of the Bilu movement. Bilu, Rashi Tevod, an acronym for Beit Yaakov Lechu V'Nelecha, right? Kind of, come on, Jacobites, or if you wish, Israelites, since Yaakov and Yisrael were one and the same, right? Lechu V'Nelecha, it's time to get up and go. And you may know that there's somewhat of a wry or sarcastic take on that, and that is that the full biblical verse is Beit Yaakov Lechu V'Nelecha Be'or Hashem, in the light of God, in the light arguably of Torah, of mitzvot, and yet many, maybe even statistically most of the Biluyim were not at all religious. We've already seen some of that friction, so to speak, in terms of some of the songs that we've looked at, some of which emphasize work and emphasize collective effort and with a total, not necessarily disdained and at least totally oblivious to any religious dimension to living in the land of Israel, while others seek to emphasize specifically the religious dimension. So that, the first Aliyah, went from 1882 until 1904. And this is the Aliyah that focused largely on agriculture. It established the first agricultural settlements. It was followed in 1904 to 1914 by the second Aliyah. The first Aliyah, the Biluyim, nobody was really keeping track of numbers. But beginning with the second Aliyah, there seems to be at least some reasonable demographic estimates. And the estimate is that in the second Aliyah, again from 1904 to 1914, saw about 40,000 immigrants arriving in Israel. These were mostly people who came individually or in small groups. That is to distinguish them from later Aliyot that were sponsored and organized by such bodies as the World Zionist Organization. So the later Aliyot was somewhat more institutional in nature. This second Aliyah, less institutional, more individual. It included such individuals as David Ben-Gurion and Yitzhak Ben-Zvi. And while the original first Aliyah was largely agricultural, a good deal of the second Aliyah was urban. Schools were established, cities were established. In 1909, Tel Aviv, the first Jewish city since the biblical period, was established. In the same year, 1909, HaShomer, the first self-defense organization, was established. And in the same year, 1909, big doings in 1909, Degania, the first kibbutz, was established. All of these, the city, the self-defense, the kibbutz, are characteristics of this second Aliyah. The third Aliyah, from 1919 to 1923, right? Obviously, immigration to Israel was not only interrupted by World War I, it was actually to an extent reversed by World War I. You'll remember, I'm sure, that World War I was the Axis powers, and that included Germany and the Ottoman Empire, fighting against not only the United States and Britain on one side, but Russia on the other, on the same side. And since most of the Jews who were living in Palestine when World War I broke out were from Eastern Europe and from Russia, then they were, in the eyes of the Turkish Ottomans, enemy aliens. And therefore, measures were taken not only to prevent them from openly siding with the Allies, but in many cases, it led to deportations. So as I said, from 1914 till the end of World War I, till 1919, as I said, not only was there really no immigration, but to an extent, it was also reversed. 1919, again, immigration resumes. And from 1919 to 1923, we have the third Aliyah, most of them coming from Eastern Europe and from Russia. And again, just some hallmarks of this Aliyah. 1920 saw the establishment of the Histadrut, or the Jewish Workers' Union. 1920, the Arab riots in Jaffa led to the creation of the Haganah. 1925 saw the establishment of both the Hebrew University in Jerusalem and the Technion in Haifa. So you see that gradually we're moving away from strictly agricultural settlements towards more, you know, urbanized. And eventually we're also going to move away from more of a socialist orientation to a, not saying that to the inclusion of more of a middle class, call it even capitalist orientation as well. That took place only later on. 1924 to 1931, the fourth Aliyah, mostly Polish Jews. 1923, there were restrictive immigration rules passed in the United States, and therefore many more Eastern European Jews who might previously have gone to the United States now came to Palestine. And finally, from 1932 to 1938, the last wave of official immigration, the fifth Aliyah, the largest of them all, approximately 200,000 Jews came during that relatively brief period. In this case, many of them, I don't know whether it's statistically most, but many of them were German Jews, those who were able to read, as it were, the handwriting on the wall and able to secure their passage out of Germany to Palestine. These were the middle class, more urban, better educated professionals. For example, from the year 1931 to 1939, the city of Tel Aviv grew its population from 46,000 to 160,000. Now, the question that I was asked before we began had to do with accents, with Ashkenazic as opposed to Sephardic pronunciation of Hebrew. As we move along chronologically, we move from a more from a population whose Hebrew was more naturally Ashkenazic and Yiddish inflected to a population that now began to include Sabras, people whose mother tongue now was Hebrew, and that modern Hebrew had adopted the Sephardic pronunciation. And obviously, once we get to 1948 and we have the large immigration from Arab countries, we get Jews whose native pronunciation of Hebrew is minimally the Sephardic pronunciation, and sometimes even a different variety of pronunciation as those of Yemenites. The true authentic Yemenite pronunciation of Hebrew is not identical with what we call the Sephardic pronunciation. The Sephardic pronunciation is distinguished by two features. The letter Sav is pronounced Tav, and the Kametz is pronounced A. not all kmetzim, but most of them. Yemenite pronunciation does indeed pronounce the letter sav as tav, but Yemenites, as I say again, native authentic Yemenite pronunciation, pronounces the kametz as an aw. So if you ask the Yemenite to read the first pasuk in the Torah, he would say bereshit, but then he would say bara Elohim. He'd say eight, but it'd be eight hashomayim, the eight ha'oretz. So most of the things that we've looked at now, even though they may be modern renditions, try to preserve the original flavor, which, as I said, is the Ashkenazic sort of Yiddish inflected Hebrew. As we move later on into the 30s and into the 40s, we'll see that change. Okay. With that, I want to move us back in time a little bit to pick up another of the very early Zionist songs. And to do that, I've got to, here we go. Okay. Can you see Bialik? Okay. Don't know if you recognized him, but this is a photo of Chaim Nachman Bialik as it appeared in Halavanon, which is one of the early Hebrew language periodicals. Kind of dapper, I would say. We've already looked at a couple of Bialik poems, El HaTzipor, for example. This is another Bialik poem, and its official name, as you can see, is Birkat Am, but it's better known by, again, the first word in the song, which is Techezakna. The opening line, Techezakna Yedei Kol Achenu, right? Strengthen the hands of all of our brothers, Hamachonanim et Afar Atzenu Basher Heim Sham, all of our Zionist brethren, all those who show a love for the land of Israel, wherever they may be. Okay, let me get the words up there, and then we can look at them together. As I said, you see, Techezakna Yidei Kol Achenu, may the hands of all of our brothers, Hamachonanim Afrot Artzenu, those who show love for the earth, for the dirt, again, this agricultural emphasis of our land, Vasher Hem Sham, wherever they may be, Al Yipol Ruchachem, may your spirits not flag, Alizim Mitronanim, may you be joyful, may you be enthusiastic, Bo Shem Echad, come all together united, Le'ezrat Ta'am, for the assistance, for the sake of our nation, of our people. Hein Sofrim Anachnu, we count et Nodechem. We count, as it were, the drops of water in your canteens. V'cholivim Nitzvei Hadma'ot, and we show love for the tears that fall. V'zeyat Ha'af, and the droplets of sweat that fall from the brows of the workers. Hayordim katal Yisrael, and we think of these droplets of sweat and tears as being dew that refreshes the land, mishovivim nafsho hanil'an, and restore its waning spirits, hasuma b'chaf, weighed as it were in the palm of the hand. So these are the words, and to play it for us, let us have, why not? A workers' choir.
We're not hearing it.
No, we're not hearing anything.
Okay. My fault. Let me get it back and play it. Now, that rendition, you might see here on the screen, my cursor is hovering over it, was actually recorded in 1922. Okay. Now, you can also see here at the top that the lachan, the tune, is identified as Amami Rusi, right? Some sort of Russian folk tune. And indeed, I actually found this.
Время не терпит дружней за работу. Дрогнул престол, само держится царя. Близится час рокового расчета. По Риме вспыхнул жизни заря. Близится час рокового расчета. Полимем вспыхнула жизнь и заря.
Rather interesting, I would say, that you notice that although that clip, that video was from 1975, the choir was all dressed up in Russian peasant blouses, and you see that the title was Kachaya, right? This is the way it was. So this indeed, this Tachezakna, is a rather significant song. I actually, along with the photograph of Bialik, picked up something else along the way. Bialik submitted this poem to somebody named Reuven Breinin, who was the editor of one of these early Hebrew periodicals. As you can see on the top, it says he's the redactor, the editor of a literary Wissenschaft Monatschrift of a monthly periodical in Vienna. Okay, and look what he writes back to Bialik. I underlined the critical passage. He says, Lo afriz al hamida, I would not be exaggerating, im omar, if I were to say, ki me odi, never, lo karati, lo karati, I guess, ivrit. It's a bit of awkward syntax. Lo karati ivrit shirim ne'alim kishirecha eile. I have never come across Hebrew poems as lofty as yours. Ula elahem, you'll recognize this as a liturgical phrase. Ula elahem mikol tushbechata v'shirata.
Wow.
This is indeed a form of hyperbole, right? He's telling you, he's writing Bialik in response that he received a collection of poems from him, including Techazakna, and that he considers these to be the finest examples of Hebrew poetry that he's ever come across. Just again, a small historical note. When Breinin published this in 1894, in his journal, I guess I'd have to make this a little bigger. I don't know if you can see the word that's underlined. Birkatam is the title. And he says that it's borrowed from a verse in the book of Psalms, a book in Tehillim. And that the verse is Birkat Hashem Aleichem Berachnu Etchem B'Shem Hashem. Right? May God's blessing be upon you. And it's very interesting because somebody obviously caught a mistake. And when it was reprinted a couple of years later, they corrected the spelling of the word Aleichem from being spelled with an ayin to being spelled with an aleph. This is a rather minor change later editions. We'll see yet today some rather more significant changes that songs underwent as they were reprinted. The Russian tune to which it is adapted, it seems to be one that was known as the Song of the 1st of May, right? May 1st, right? The Workers' Day, etc. So that appears to be the source of the tune. Here again from let me tell you a bit of the background here. What led to the to this? Okay. This is for later on. Okay. So we can move back. I'm sorry, just take me a moment here. Okay. All right. Here we move on from Techazakna, which was written in 1894, to a song that appears in 1898, called Su'utziona Nes Vadegel. Again, the adaptation, at least of the title, of a biblical verse. The theme, raise a banner, a flag for Zion, for Zion, Degel Machane Yehuda. That's, again, it's a biblical verse. It's the Torah verse, actually. It's the tribe of Judah, of course, was the origin of the Davidic kingdom. So in a sense, it makes a political statement. And then it asks sort of rhetorically, mi varechev, mi baregel, whether you're going to come on foot, whether you're going to come by chariot. Already by 1898, a chariot could have been already a locomotive, a train. Na'as nala aguda, everybody, whether they're coming on foot, whether they're coming by train, whether they're coming by boat, they should all become one group, one aguda, one union. Yachad, and together, nelchana, we will go, nashuva, we will return. To where will we return? Artza avotenu, to the land of our ancestors. El artzenu ha'ahuva, to our beloved land. Eres yaldutenu, as it were, the crib, in which we spent our childhood. So we're returning it. Shuvu, shuvu mimerchakim. He's calling upon all of the Jews to return from however distant they may be. Artza eretz avot, return to the land of our patriarchs. Nusu, nusu mimahamakim. Get out of all of these places that are filled with despair. Be'ezrat, with the assistance of shochein aravot, which again, choosing a phrase from the book of Tehillim rather than coming right out and saying something like Be'ezrat Hashem, with the help of God. And here it goes. Thank you. I don't think you had any difficulty recognizing the tune. It's one that we certainly tried out on Simchas Torah, if not on other occasions during the year. The usual words that accompany it also do with lifting up, but it's Tzu'u Sha'arim Rasheichem, U'su'u Pitchei Olam, V'yavo Melech HaKavod. Right? So the same tune, Su Shiarim Rashechem Hu Pitchei Olam. So the same tune was adapted here for this Zionist hymn. And again, just to show you how old things never die.
מתופפים את תזהרו, אתם ממהרים? ושבסיום
Okay. So there was a request that was made 2 weeks ago and repeated again last week, and I didn't ignore it the first time. I just didn't have time to research it. But I did come through with Pol De'eretz Chemdat Avot. So the words, again, this is, again, something that has its origins in Yiddish. I think that on the source sheet, give me 1 second here. Okay. Yeah, okay. If you look at the source sheet, so I can put it up here on the screen. Okay. The song that has come to be known in Hebrew is Po Be'eretz Chemdat Avot. This here in the land, this desirable land of our ancestors, actually has its origin in a Yiddish poem that was put to tune. And they're very different from each other. And it may actually explain the popularity of the Hebrew version, precisely because it deliberately sought to reverse the tone of the Yiddish original. The Yiddish original, as you can see at the bottom of the page, its title was the Golos March, right? The march through the exile, the march through the diaspora. And it goes as follows, and I hope I can do the Yiddish justice. Mit dem Wanderstock in Hand, with our makel nedudim, with our wanderer's stick in hand, on a heim, without a home, un on a land, and without a land, on a goel, without a redeemer, on a friend, and even without a friend, on a morgen, without a tomorrow, on a hent, without even a today, nit geduldet nor geyoget, without patience, without, not sure exactly what that is, bugenechteke nit getogt, wherever we slept last night, that's not where we are any longer today. Immer, always, vai. I don't think that needs translation. Immer, we're always being told, guy. That's with a somewhat Galiciana accent, I assume Litvaks would say, gay. Okay? So we're always being told, get out of here. Immer shofen, I'm sorry, immer shvan, Kozman Koyach is Faran. We're always longing, as it were, but we have no hope, we have no strength. So this is the original in Yiddish. And apparently, somebody in Israel decided to turn it around. And that happened, as you can see, in the year 1912. We know actually not only the name of the author of the Hebrew version, but we actually know the circumstances under which it was written. In 1912, the city of Tel Aviv, as I mentioned previously, was 3 years old. And in Tel Aviv, there was already a gymnasia, a high school. And in the spring of 1912, the students of the gymnasia in Tel Aviv were about to go on a on their annual pre-Pesach hike. So the administrators of the school turned to the music teacher, right, and to the class mechanech, educator, and asked them, because this was typical in those days, to prepare some sort of a song, some sort of an uplifting song that would be sort of like the hymn of that that year's hike, of that year's tiyul. Yisrael Dushman was the mechanech, and the music teacher's name was Hanina Karchavsky, and between the two of them, they decided to take the Yiddish Golos March and to rewrite it in light of their own more pleasant and more optimistic circumstances. And that is what produced the Po Be'eretz Chemdat Avot. So you can see how the vai, the cries of woe of the original Yiddish, were turned into gil, and how our being homeless and being without a land was transformed into po be'eretz chemdat avot. And some of the literature of the period suggests that at least for a period of time, this po be'eretz chemdat avot was even more widely sung and even more widely popular in Palestine than even HaTikvah. And
thank
as long
so
as we're
much.
On the subject of Tel Aviv, how can we not enjoy Mi Yivneh Bayit B'Tel Aviv?
Can I just say one thing, that my mother learned this song in Europe and they did not sing it as Po Be'eretz Chemdat Avot, but Sham Be'eretz Chemdat Avot.
Just as the dreidel would say sham instead of
that's
po.
Right, that's right, yeah.
Thank you. Okay. Although in 1929, obviously, Tel Aviv was already a burgeoning city, and the Kerem, the vineyards in Rishon LeZion, had been planted under the auspices of the Rothschilds still in the 19th century, and Tel Chai had certainly been there since the early years of the 20th century, and there were already pardesim in Rehovot. Again, it's sort of, you know, typical of the time. And I guess that the fact that all of these things had already been accomplished even before the song was written may very well have inspired the parody that you can see. It's here. In fact, I don't even need to change anything. I think it's here on the website. Yeah, there's even a parody of it. I think I included it in the source sheet. It goes as follows, right? Again, it acts rhetorically, Mi yivneh yivneh Tel Aviv, who's going to build Tel Aviv? And the answer is not chalutzim, the answer is socharim, merchants, gazoznikim, right? People who operate candy stores, right? Yivnu at Tel Aviv, they're the ones who are contributing to the building of Tel Aviv. And it asks again, Mi yivneh Tel Chai, in the third stanza. Okay, what's going to sustain Tel Chai? It doesn't need to be built. It's already there. So the answer is, if anything will sustain it, it'll be Ruach Trumpeldor, right? Yosef Trumpeldor, right, who was killed in Tel Chai. We'll actually get to that song probably next week. In addition to Ein Charod, which I guess by the time when it was originally founded in the vicinity of Zichron Yaakov, was probably intended to be an agricultural settlement. These days, at least lately, Ein Charod is more of an artist's village. So the final stanza in the parody adds a new place. It says, Mi yivneh b'nei brak? And the answer is, Ruach chasidim tivneh b'nei brak, right? That b'nei brak is sustained by the spirit of the chasidim. Okay.
Rabbi, Ein Charod is an Emek Bet She'an.
What am I confusing it with?
Ein Charod is Emek Bet She'an.
Yeah, I understand. So I'm obviously confusing it with something.
There is an art village not far from Zichron Yaakov, but that's not the name.
It's Ein Hod.
Ein Hod.
Okay. A senior
Thank
moment.
You.
Thank you. Thank you for the correction.
There is an Ein Charod in Emek Yisrael too.
I'll tell you what. We'll consult a map and we'll get a ruling by next week. Okay. In a bit of time that we have left, I want to look. Yes, I should point out, just by the way, that the author of this Mi'yivne Bayit, as you can see, it's kind of like a ditty. And that's somewhat reminiscent more of children's songs than it is of songs that you're expecting chalutzim to sing. And indeed, it was written by one of the foremost authors of children's literature in the both pre-state and the early years of the State of Israel, and that is Levin Kipnis, who was an Israeli children's author and poet, wrote mainly in Hebrew and in Yiddish. He wrote songs in Hebrew. He wrote children's books. He was active as a writer from the age, really, of before he was 10 years old. He had already published until his death in 1990. So I just wanted to take note of his name. Okay. The next song brings us really into a different category of songs, a category of songs that were inspired by military actions, either actions that were taken by the early Haganah in self-defense, or as we go along, actions that were taken by Jewish soldiers as part of a Jewish brigade fighting alongside the British in World War I or other similar situations.
Yes, it used to be at the time of the British mandate. So the Etzel and Lehi, you know, they were kind of chayalim almonim belim adim.
So you've saved me the trouble of saying it. Thank you. And indeed, the author of this song is none other than the eponymous founder of the Stern Group, which some people call the Stern Gang. And that is Avraham Stern. Avraham, known as Yair, was his nom de guerre. Avraham Stern. Yair was the commander of Masada, and that's a nom de guerre that Avraham Stern took. Indeed, the Chayalim Almonim were the anonymous soldiers. Soldiers Bli Madim, who didn't even fight in uniforms. Svivenu, around whom, was surrounded by Ema, by fear, and by Tzalmavet, and by darkness. Kulanu Guyasnu L'chol HaChayim. Every one of them felt that he was conscripted for life. Mishura Tishachrer Rak HaMavet. And that the only release from this kind of service would be, unfortunately, death. B'yamim adumim, in the days that are bloodied red, shel praot v'damim, of the riots. Remember that there were riots already as early as 1920, the Arab riots in Yafo, the 1929 riots in Hebron and elsewhere. B'leilot hashchorim shel yeush, in the dark nights in which people despaired. B'arim, in cities. B'akfarim, in villages. Et diglenu narim. These soldiers would raise the flag, the alav, and what is emblazoned on the flag, Haganah, defense, the kibush, and conquest. Lo giyastnu bashtot kahamon avadim. These are not soldiers who were conscripted forcibly like slaves, which was what the practice was in the Ottoman army. Kidei lishpoch banechar et damenu, to fight, as it were, abroad in foreign lands. Ritzoneinu, our will, lihiyot la'olam b'nei chorin, is merely to preserve our freedom. Chalomeinu, and our dream, lamut ba'ad artzeinu. Of course, borrowing the famous words attributed to Trumpledore at Tel Chai. And here we have, okay, I assume it doesn't really matter. Okay.
Oh,
The last song that we're going to have time for today comes from a similar era, 1938, but it gives us an opportunity to meet two personalities. The author, Nathan Alterman, and the composer, Daniel Samborski, whom we actually already met last week because they are the author and the composer of Shir HaEmek that we already had an opportunity to listen to. And they collaborated again on this song, which was requested by Yitzhak Sadeh, the founder of the and first commander of the Palmach. In 1937, Yitzhak Sadeh established what were called the field companies, Plugot Sadeh, also known by an acronym. If you look at the third stanza of the song, okay, Pluga, right, the combat unit. Ali, Ali, Bahar, they're called upon to climb up a mountain. Pluga, and they're told, Kavosh, Tichvoshi, they'll be successful. They'll take their objective. Bimkom, Sham Ish, Od Lo Avar, in places that people rarely go. It says, Sham Ya'avru HaFoshim. And you see that Foshim has that telltale sign of an abbreviation. So Foshim is the abbreviation for Plugot Sadeh. For these field companies, they were the forerunner of the Haganah and the forerunner of the Palmach. And it was at the request, as I said, of Yitzhak Sadeh, the founder of the Plugot Sadeh, that Nathan Alterman, an Israeli poet, playwright, journalist, and translator, wrote these words. And Daniel Samborski, who was a well-known and highly regarded composer, we'll see several more of his songs as we go along. As I said, collaborated, not for the first time, on producing this Zemer HaPlugot. It's just been my observation, and that's not a statistical one, it's just mine. When you see Israeli military ceremonies, it could be a swearing in, it could be, you know, a promotion. It could be when they're a part of a ceremony greeting a foreign dignitary. If they play a march, you know, something really rousing that has a really good beat to it. Again, just my observation. I don't know if it's statistically correct. They tend to play this Zemer HaPlugot. Thank you. let's get it with the words. Really does it for today. Let me just take a quick look at the.
Wow. I just want to tell you that I can cry.
I appreciate your time, but if I have to listen to you, I can't look at the chat, and that's not I can't do that right now. Okay. These are just the sources. Wow. First Jew born in Tel Aviv. Wow. Was there a hospital? He was born at home, I assume. Okay. Yes. Well, obviously Camp Masad. Yes. 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 Okay. The year, if you check the source sheets, the years of the composition of all of these poems is posted there, as well as the information about the composition of the tunes. Okay. That's not for me to answer about Masad. Yes, I mentioned the Levin Kipnis was. Yes, he wrote popular children's songs, etc. Yes. Okay. Yes. Palmach, abbreviation of Pluchat Machat, strike force. Yes. Okay. All the links are in the source sheets. So if you do me a favor, just, I'll try to respond, to this one. But all the sources, for all the video clips as well as for the words, they're all in the source sheets. I'm just going to copy this so that I don't lose it, and I'll try to respond to it. Yes, I'm sorry. Now, there was somebody who wanted to tell us something, but I just had to check this first. By all means, please.
Okay, so I think I told you before, I was born, I'm seventh generation from Jerusalem, and all these songs, I could cry, I lived it. I was in the Lehi, it was a like Haganah, and so it's just like this program is amazing for me. Thank you so much.
No, you're very, very welcome. You're welcome. Okay. You are excellent.
You mentioned.
Thank you again, everybody. And be sure to tune in for the Torah in Motion Purim programs that we were told about. And I look forward to seeing you all again next week.
Is it possible to have
Hold on, I can't. Trey Kole Lo Mishtame.
Is it possible to have your email address?
My email address?
Website.
My email address is msokolo@yu.edu.
Can we watch this again somehow, and how could I do that?
As I said, all of the this recording that's on the Torah will be on the Torah in Motion website. All of the programs are archived on the Torah in Motion website. Okay? Take care, everybody. Kodesh Tov to all. Mishanechnas Adar Marbim.
Besimcha.
Thank you.
Besimcha.